Okay, and we're back. And some interesting news. Reverend Ted Pike joins us now. Ted has, more than probably anybody else in the public eye, literally been fighting for our First Amendment freedoms for years and years and years, and doing so with great effect against odds that you would be shocked to understand about. I'm talking about the Christian, so-called Christian right, which has done next to nothing to help. And you get, I don't know how many tens of millions involved there. But Ted does an awful lot on his own. He has had tremendous success. We're going to talk about that and start off with the ENDA issue. And hi, Ted. Welcome back. Hello, Ted?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I got you now.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate your standing in the gap here with me on the ENDA bill, because we do have a tremendous opportunity now to really knock it in the head.
What is, for our listeners who don't know, the ENDA, E-N-D-A, ENDA bill, and why is it a threat?
Well, ENDA stands for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Now, this is the Anti-Defamation Workplace Hate Crimes Law. Now, many of our listeners are familiar with the ADL's Civil Liberties Free Speech Law, which was their federal hate crimes bill, the Matthew Shepard bill, which was passed by Congress and signed into law by the president last fall. But this is a special ADL bill designed to force employers in the workplace to hire qualified homosexuals. If they are qualified and if they have been hired, they cannot be fired for any reason having to do with their sexuality or their manner or whatever. That means if an employer has a cross-dressing transvestite who's qualified in computers or administration or something, and that a cross-dresser transvestite has no real competition, then that employer better beware of not hiring that she-man, because the full force of the federal government would come down on him as a hate criminal. Similarly, if that she-man wants to stand at the front desk with her high heels and dress and lingerie and a stubble beard and broad shoulders, then that employer's got to stuff it. He's got to take that regardless of the adverse effect that has upon his customers. So this is just this is another amendment, like the Federal Hate Crimes Bill, to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which basically gave special rights and protections, not just equality, but special rights and protections in violation of the 14th Amendment for blacks. And what the homosexuals are doing now in the ADL is wanting to piggyback upon that excessive legislation of the 60s and actually give homosexuals those same preferential privileges.
How can this be taken and spun into areas that affect the right of basic freedoms that we all cherish and rely upon to remain relatively free of fascist dictatorship?
Literally for thousands of years, a man's home has been regarded as his castle, and his business is regarded in the law as belonging to himself. If he has a restaurant and he says, he has a sign out in front, I don't serve people who don't wear shoes or don't wear a shirt or whatever, that's well within the prerogative of an individual entrepreneur. But what these civil rights laws have done, as I said, from the 60s, is saying that when it comes to race, or it comes now to sexual orientation, mm-hmm. the entrepreneur, the private owner, has no rights whatever. In fact, it's really viewed that the business belongs to the masses, in fact, the proletariat. This is socialism, this is communism, and the blacks, the Chicanos, the gays, etc., are the modern proletariat who have the right to literally own the investment of the capitalist that he has given his blood, sweat, and tears to make possible.
Right.
We don't have any rights, any property rights, according to these kinds of laws. It all goes to the whoever wants to avail themselves of what we have created. And so basically, this is almost a communist takeover of free enterprise and in the capitalist system.
Where is the bill today?
Well, the bill right now has gone through both the Education and Labor Committees in both the House and the Senate.
Right.
Had very little opposition, but on the other hand, it's really dragging now because, of course, we only have at most a couple of months before the summer recess, and there's a tremendous glut of legislation coming through. But also, there's a tremendous amount of flack emerging. And I'm right in the forefront of sending that flack toward Congress against what is called the transgender provision in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And the transgender provision, it's a Section 8, a Paragraph 3, basically says that if a transgender, meaning if any male employee of a business with more than 15 employees, such as a college, such as a sports club, or whatever, if any male employee wants to describe himself and think of himself as transitioning into a female, then, regardless of whether he's going through any kind of hormone therapy or projected surgery or anything like that, according to the transgender provision, all he has to do is go down to the administration office of, let's say, that college or the office of a sports club and say, I am now wanting to be a female. And with that notice to the leadership of that business, he has the right, he has federally enforced right to go in to the bathrooms and possibly even into the shower facilities of that business and be with the women in their lavatories as well as showering. Enda wants basically unisex bathrooms and shower facilities. And what's happening now is this provision, the transgender provision, is so radical, so unprecedented, so searing to our moral values that even a number of Democrats, dyed-in-the-wool liberal Democrats, are saying, hey, this is too much. I can't take this, and especially I can't take this with a midterm election coming up in the fall. And so what we have here is a golden opportunity to really kill the end of bill, especially in the Senate, because there are 13 senators, 12 Democrats and one Republican, whom the gay lobby is especially targeting, who are sitting on the fence. They are worried about midterm elections. They are fighting for their lives on their home turf. And interestingly, even Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, is one of these who will not declare himself in favor of the transgender provision, a form of the end of legislation, because he's fighting against real stiff conservative opposition in Utah, and he considers himself a Mormon and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I have been doing, and you have been publishing my articles and putting me on the radio and so on, is I am encouraging lovers of freedom now to blitz these 13 crucial undecided Democrats and keep them from filling up the total of 60 members of the Senate, which is necessary to pass in the Senate. And you've been publishing my articles. We're giving the phone numbers, and maybe in the course of this broadcast we can give those phone numbers.
Let's just talk about transgender and transsexuals. How many people, do we have any idea, are actually involved with this kind of a process or engaged in this situation of transgender lifestyle?
Well, it's infinitesimal, and that's why it's especially ludicrous.
That's my point. Yeah.
That the whole Congress, and especially the Democratic program, looking forward to the fall, is being basically boycotted or taken ransom by this infinitesimally small a number of the American population. You see, the homosexual lobby and the transgender lobby are determined that even if they have to destroy the Democrats in November, they're going to push this through. And they are working night and day to persuade these reluctant 13 Democrats, but there's increasing reverberations coming out of Washington, and I give some of those in my latest email that came out today from the homosexual newspapers and so on, that that the Democratic leadership is really beginning to balk at all of this.
Well, it still amazes me how an infinitesimally small number of people can command such infamous notoriety. It really boggles the mind.
I'll tell you why in a minute, Jeff.
Okay, back with the amazing Reverend Ted Pike and all of you good people in just a couple minutes. Okay, back with Ted Pike. All right, how do they do it? And what's the larger agenda? Who's greasing the wheels of this little tiny mouse?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I have been accusing the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith for the last 20 years of being solidly behind all hate crimes legislation worldwide,
right,
not only in America, but Canada, France, England, Germany, Australia, and so on. And interestingly, this summer, after the hate bill was finally passed, the ADL really came out of the closet and congratulated itself, bragging repeatedly that it had both originated and made possible the federal hate crimes bill. And the same is true of ENDA. ENDA is saturated with exactly the same terminology, ambition, twisted definitions, and all these kinds of things. It's as I say, it's ADL's hate crimes bill for the workplace. Now, all of these homosexuals that ostensibly liberals and homosexuals that often the religious right says are behind these kinds of bills are really just cannon fodder. They're just lackeys. They're front people. The real energy for passage of these bills and the tenacity of getting them pushed all the way through Congress very largely comes from the ADL, which is working the halls of the Senate and the House office buildings behind the scenes, putting on pressure, blackmailing, cajoling, pressuring members of Congress, looking forward to elections coming up, making all kinds of deals to get this legislation through. And so what's happening right now is the ADL is determined not only to pass its federal hate crimes bill, which it did successfully, but also the next big plum, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And we should remember that the chief architects of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act are homosexual, liberal, Jewish supremacists. I'm talking about Representative Barney Frank and also Chai Feldblum, who is the behind-the-scenes originator and a legislative manipulator. In fact, President Obama just recently appointed her to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, where if ENDA is passed, she, as the originator of the bill, will enforce it from the federal level.
Okay, ENDA. When's it due for a vote? What's your best projection on that? And how much time do we have to really pressure these Democrats?
Well, the clock is ticking now, and nobody knows when it will come to a vote. Evidently, the ADL and the homosexuals do have enough votes in the House. They're claiming they have 202 votes, enough votes to shoot it through any kind of a markup hearing and even perhaps to passage on the floor. But again, the big problem is the Senate, because unless the Senate is ready to do the same thing and they can muster a full 60 votes enough to back down a filibuster, then the whole thing will collapse. And what the people like Barney Frank and the rest of the Pelosi's and so on, what they don't want to do is to even pass it in the House and then have it collapse in the Senate, because that'll make the bill into a two-time loser. It lost in the last session of Congress. It loses this time. Then it has it on its record that it's tarnished with at least two defeats, making it even harder to introduce next time around in the next Congress. So wisely, I believe the top leadership of the Democrats are beginning to drag their feet, and the homosexuals are screaming and crying complaining that they're not getting proper cooperation from House, especially House leadership. But I can certainly see the point of view of the Democrats, because if they don't watch out, the homosexual lobby and the ADL are going to drag down the Democrats to total disaster in November. You see, if the end the bill continues to preoccupy controversy in on the Capitol scene even throughout the summer, and it's very doubtful whether the Senate will even have time to discuss or debate or vote on the end the bill before the summer recess. But if this bill is pushed forward, then it's going to generate all kinds of extremely bad controversy, bad press for the Democrats right up to the November election. And I'm talking about the worst kind of publicity, because there's something that is viscerally repugnant to mainstream heartland America when the idea of men, perverted men, coming into women's restrooms and showering with co-eds and women in shower facilities. This is just absolutely so disgusting. And to have that intimately tied together with the Democrats right up to the midterms election could really create a landslide of success for the conservative right. So this is a wonderful opportunity, as I say, to grease the skids, to get those calls going in, especially this week. In fact, this is a wonderful investment for the future, because if we can totally discredit, can totally saturate Congress right now with prejudice against the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, as I say, it's going to make it much, much harder for ADL to bring it around again and again in previous Congresses. Can I just give that toll-free number now, Jeff?
Of course you can. Please.
Yeah, the toll-free number to these 13 crucial senators is 877-851-6437. That's 877-851-6437. And, Jeff, I believe you have my latest article up at your website. I do have those 13 listed. People can also find that at truthtellers.org right on our homepage.
All right, stand by. We'll be right back with Ted in just a couple minutes. I think it's important that we look at the terrain in general and see what other attacks are being planned and launched constantly to tear down our Constitution, especially the First Amendment. Back in a minute. All right, let's get right back to Ted. As we have been reporting to you for many, many years with Ted and with others, but Ted's been at this. How long, Ted? Over 20 years now.
Well, I published my book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, in 1984, and then my first video, The Other Israel, in 87. So I was pretty much committed at that time.
Yeah. All right. How many other attacks are there in the wings? Now, you've been able to turn many of them back, but they did succeed in passing one by immorally attaching it to a bill which had nothing to do with it, of course, which is their last gasp trick. But how many other bills and measures are you aware of that are being written or have actually been introduced in some form or another in the so-called Congress that would take away more of our constitutional right to freedom of choice, freedom of inquiry, and freedom of speech?
Well, there are three of them outstandingly waiting in the wings. And one of the advantages, really, of dealing a death blow to ENDA right now is that it'll completely destroy the chances of these other three bills getting through. The first one of top consideration is the Student Non-Discrimination Act, H.R. 4530, another ADL hate crimes bill. It makes it a federal hate crime to repeatedly criticize a grade school or a high school student for his or her homosexuality.
A federal hate crime.
Mm-hmm. In the grade schools too. If you have let's say a 12-year-old kid who wants to consider himself a homosexual, wear pantyhose and a skirt and a wig to school or whatever, and he is repeatedly criticized, this is called harassment and intimidation, according to H.R. 4530. Mm-hmm. And if it causes sufficient distress in that child that child does not attend even one school function, that child has the right to contact the local district attorney, who will contact Eric Holder and bring the feds down for possible arrest and indictment of whoever was harassing that child.
Unreal.
That's a very serious bill, an ADL bill that is hanging in there and would pretty much be stopped, I think, if ENDA were stopped. And then there's the Every Child Deserves a Family Act, H.R. 3827, another ADL bill, very similar to English hate crimes bills, which forces adoption agencies to place foster children with homosexuals. The gay lobby and ADL now are working real hard to round up literally hundreds of thousands of homosexual same-sex married couples and put them on the list for adoption agencies in which little children, babies, infants, and so on will be put in these homes. And tragically, there has been massive research to show that any child put into a homosexual so-called home is almost sure to either become perverted or severely mentally twisted in the process.
Right. Wow.
And then the third one that I'm concerned about is the Freedom from Discrimination in Credit Act, H.R. 4376, which was introduced by Representative Steve Israel, again on behalf of ADL. It makes it a federal hate crime to deny a homosexual who might actually be dying of AIDS a loan because of his homosexuality. Even if you know the man is dying and can't even pay you back, and yet because he's a homosexual, you deny him credit, you can be indicted as a federal hate criminal.
And there are probably other things we don't even know about being written. This is an endless parade.
The ADL is a perpetual artesian, an artesian sewer.
No, it's a running,
legislation.
Perfect.
That is coming through. And, you know, a good question we can ask is, what is the motivation? What is the motivation for the ADL to tirelessly hatch, contrive new legislation and preoccupying our time and Congress's time debating and fighting back this kind of thing and dealing with it when there are much more pressing national issues? And the very simple truth is that they are interested in trashing and tearing down Christian civilization, capitalistic free enterprise system, bringing a socialist destruction of everything that makes America strong and resistant, because ADL is interested in basically world control and world domination. And in fact, this Chai Feldblum, who was the principal writer of the ENDA bill along with Barney Frank, is a descendant of a long line of Orthodox Jewish rabbis. Her mother was a Hasidic Jew, which is a Kabbalistic Jew, and Chai Feldblum, in fact, was determined to become a rabbi herself until the Orthodox hierarchy refused to let her become a rabbi. So instead of doing that, she went to law school. She became an expert in legislative lawyering, as she describes it, and she has become an expert working behind the scenes with the ADL, contriving exactly the kind of bills we're talking about here today.
Unreal. Now, with the current configuration in Congress, here we are May, June, July, August, September, October, November. We got 6 months until the election, and then the new members aren't sworn in, I don't know how many weeks after. We have an ability here, potentially, to really make a big change this fall. I don't know how it can be done without the Christian right waking up. It amazes me how you've stood up and had to deal with these people when they ought to be standing right beside you, shoulder to shoulder, all the way through. What happened to the so-called Christian right? Who's running it? And how do we somehow reclaim it to be responsible?
Well, that's a wonderful question to ponder, because I've been working on that question for the last 20 years. The Christian right has always had an extreme aversion to hate crimes legislation. because they know right under the surface is the ADL, God's chosen people, and they believe that if they criticize God's chosen people, a divine curse will come down upon them. Even more importantly, they know that if they criticize God's chosen people, in other words, the ADL, that their parishioners with their checkbooks will evacuate very quickly as ADL brings the charge of anti-Semitism against them. So they have assiduously avoided hate crimes legislation and my efforts to educate them and motivate them to action. Even as late as this spring, the two largest, the Focus on the Family and American Family, Family Research Council, did virtually nothing for the entire year letting the hate bill pass.
All right, there's a reason for that. We'll ask Ted to explain further in just a minute. The heroic efforts and dedication of Ted Pike literally have saved much of the Republic's right to freedom of speech. And that's no overstatement. Be right back with Ted in just a minute. Okay, and we're back with Ted Pike. Ted, it looks like the so-called president is nominating back-to-back female Jewish American lesbians
yes.
to the high court. This gives... There are less than 2% of the people in this country who even refer to themselves as being Jewish Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the number would be 3 if these two are confirmed on the court.
Yes.
Do we see a problem here, folks? Just
well, we certainly see a pattern. We certainly see a pattern, don't we?
Yeah.
And of course, I got right in front of me Pat Buchanan's latest.
Yeah, good for Pat.
A good statement by Pat pointing out that 1/3 of the Supreme Court will now be Jewish.
It's 1/3, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, a third, three out of the 9.
Yeah.
And there is a pattern here, whether it's Chai Feldblum or Kagan or whatever, that this tribe, this very small minority of the American population somehow has the ability to surround the president and to dominate Congress and to dictate foreign policy in the Middle East again and again, regardless of which administration, Republican or Democrat. And maybe that evidence is, to a certain extent, circumstantial, but the pattern is overwhelming and repetitious over the decades. And, you know, it actually goes back hundreds, if not thousands of years, to the fact that very early, the Jews, the Pharisees, and so on, learned that through the power of money, they could get the sovereigns of nations under their control as money lenders to the nations and so on. They learned that they weren't going to waste any time on trying to become popular with the people, but they could loan money to the monarchs and to the parliaments and so on. And really, the opinion of the people didn't matter much anymore. And this is the dilemma we're in today. You and I know that truth about the Jewish supremacists is spreading exponentially throughout the world and even isolating Israel. But the fact of the matter is that the Jews have their tentacles, their claws, in the sovereigns, the monarchs, and the governments of the nations, so that government policy goes forward very largely unfazed by what the people think.
Correct. Correct. And when it's backed up by the privately owned, and this is essentially true, the privately owned State of Israel. Israel is essentially privately owned. It is answerable to the Rothschilds and the City of London banking cartel confines and other international Zionist organizations. It is not a nation unto itself. It just never has been. Correct?
Yeah. Well, that's right. Go back to the Balfour Declaration in 1917.
Right.
Who was it addressed to? It was addressed to Lord Rothschild.
That's right. Okay.
Lord Rothschild, we're going to give you some real estate in Palestine to make as a safe haven for the Jewish people.
So.
And, of course, it turned out, as Netanyahu said recently, there's no place on earth as dangerous for Jews as Palestine now.
Right.
So it's been a tremendous flop fiasco in that regard. But on the other hand, I believe that what we're seeing is that regardless of world opinion, Israel is going to hunker down and continue to insulate itself, as, if necessary, against what the ADL is now calling a pandemic of anti-Semitism worldwide. And there is a very great value in raising public indignation against Israel, against this Jewish supremacism.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically speaking, they have hedges and insulation against public pressure, public coercion, which may be able to outwear us and outlast us.
Well, they own the media, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. They own motion pictures, they own television, radio, the print media, magazines. When they control that much power, they can pretty well take care of almost anything. This whole term, excuse me, anti-Semitism, let's just run over it one more time, is absurd, because most of the people involved with the Zionist state of Israel are not Semitic peoples. They are Khazars. They are light-skinned from the Caucasus of Europe, who adopted, when the Khazar Empire was at its height, they adopted the religion, Judaism, in the 700s, and ultimately their empire faded and they were banished and they fled west to Europe and took it with them. But they had the same ethic, and the same ethic was to work essentially and make money on the efforts of other people. And that ethic is what drives it. Nothing to do with Semitic peoples, Palestinian and Israeli, whether they be Israeli Arab, Israeli Jew, Israeli Christian, share essentially the same exact genetics. Those are Semitic peoples. They were born there, they've been there forever. Most Jews are not Semitic peoples. So the whole term anti-Semitic is absurd. It should be anti-Zionist, that's what we try to say most of the time. And that's the bottom line. This is not a religious movement. Zionism is a secular political movement of international geopolitical hegemony and subjugation of people who do not agree with it. Very simple.
Yes.
It's nothing to do with anti-Semitism. That is a canard, a fraud, and people are beginning to catch on to this, especially when it's promulgated by non-Semites. I mean, the whole thing is absurd.
Well, the truth is only about a third of so-called Jews in the world today can claim
any
Semitic ancestry,
yeah.
Especially from Jews who are Sephardic Oriental or going back to Babylon and so on. The Jews were, the tribe of Judah was in Babylon for 1,600 years following the exile of Nebuchadnezzar. So there is such a thing as authentic bloodline Jews in the world today, but you are correct in pointing out that the Jews in the middle of the 9th century A.D., so-called Jews of Eastern Europe, the Ashkenazi Jew, are descendants of the ancient Khazars. You know what's interesting? Alania Kagan, the very word Kagan, was the king of the Khazars. The Kagan converted to Judaism.
Really?
Yeah, the Kagan. That's the name of the king of the Khazars. And so here you have a very clear indication of exactly where her ancestors came from. And a distinctive feature about these Khazars, especially in the Middle Ages and the 15th century and so on, was these Eastern European Jewish proselytes is what they were, really, really accepted the Talmud, but especially the Jewish Kabbalah with all of its dreams of world ambition. And they actually, out of Hasidic Judaism and so on, have carried on this dream of world empire almost with a zeal and a fervor outmatching the original Jews themselves.
All true, all true. The Rothschilds, it's hard to believe that one family, an extended family, and its minions, and its token members of other groups, could control that much. I have a documentary up, or it should still be up there, that proposes that the Rothschilds control about one-third of the world's wealth. Even if it's one-fourth, it doesn't matter. The power is absolute. The power is the power of life and death over entire populations, over countries, wars. 100 million people last century Rothschild financed wars, for the most part. Rothschild bankers, the bankster, the banker cartels. It's an amazing situation, which eludes, of course, the majority of people because the media is owned by the Rothschild-type mentality.
Yeah, it's, you bet. Well, you know, with that in mind, considering this almost omnipresent power, it is most remarkable that we're backing down and we are in a very good position to defeat a special legislative offensive by this very power of ADL, the Neighborhood, Rothschilds, and so on, to take away freedom. And that's why I encourage everybody tonight, first thing in the morning, go to Rents.com, go to truthtellers.org, get the list of those 13 crucial senators, give them a call. The number is 877-851-6437. Just say, please don't vote for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. They'll tally that there. And I believe if we continue to put on the pressure, get an avalanche of calling going in there, we can set the ADL back literally years by humiliating them and penetrating Congress with the total truth about this awful legislation.
Ted, is there any real hope or optimism to shake the Christian right out of its lethargy and mesmerization?
Well, all the leaders of the Christian right are very familiar with what I'm doing. They get my emails. I can't say anything that they don't know what I'm saying.
Sure, of course.
But you see, they're terrified of me because I bring an indictment against them that they have been very bad shepherds of the flock, at least for the last 100 years.
True.
ADL is also terrified of me because of my candor in speaking out, as I have been tonight, telling the whole truth about their sinister activities. So they know, both sides know a very great deal about me, but right. You see, there's such tremendous vested interest in the new right. With generations of commitments and cooperation mm-hmm. with the Jews and Zionism and everything having to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost impossible for them to extricate themselves out of the commitments they've made without financial as well as a disaster to their reputations. Meanwhile, all I'm responsible for, just like you are, is to tell the whole truth, especially as God leads me to speak it, and I'm determined to do that to the end.
Ted, you've been an inspiration for a long, long time, and I look forward to continue working with you every step of the way. Thank you on behalf of tens of millions of freedom-loving Americans and peoples around the world who are listening as well. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Okay, good night. Good night. Reverend Ted Pike, and you can find Ted's stories at Rents.com under Featured Stories, and they're there. All right. Well, lots to think about. And it's all worthy of your time. Back tomorrow night. See you in 21 hours.